Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Devil's Advocate on KTXT 88.1 FM, The Raider. We're having a lot of fun here in the studio right now, not knowing who's doing what, who's doing that.
Wait, what?
It's so much fun. As if we ever have a real plan on this show. Dr. K's running around. Of course, Dr. K's old. He forgets what he's always doing, so Dr. K's always running around. So we're going to have some fun tonight. I'm here with Matthew and Caitlin,
Matthew
Dr. K.
Can't hear anything, so this will be even more fun.
Oh, this will be great. This will be so much fun.
He can't.
What a great show to come back into the stadium for.
Can you hear us? Call if you can hear us.
I believe we can all hear each other now.
I've seen the light now. I've heard the light.
Heard the light?
Amen. As if we needed more to talk about. Things that are broken. Headphones being passed around. Great show to come back to. So obviously the big news from last night, the State of the Union address. Usually we would have clips and witty things to say.
And well, we may still because the boss is on the way and Lem Chung just walked in, so it could happen.
Fantastic. Let's hoping. As if the president really needs help though. He gave a great speech last night. Great speech.
Not
wow.
An
really. Well, here's the thing. Here's my honest. Opinion
if you
of last
say to God,
night.
I will be impressed.
It was a good speech. Do I expect any of it to happen? Absolutely not. There's not a snowball's chance in heck that any of it'll happen, but it was a good speech.
I don't know. I just don't like all the analogies. Like, John makes pizza and Linda works from 9 to 5 and needs minimum wage. I just hate all the analogies where it's, I don't know. It's just repetitive.
How ironic that, and I'm going to be gendered and sexist, how ironic that the woman Boo. In this studio doesn't like the stuff that's just thrown in there to entertain women who watch this speech.
Well, that's not true. That's not entertaining. It's just boring.
So as long as it's entertaining but sexist, it's okay. That radio at its finest, folks.
Yeah.
You know, what slayed me about the speech is he would say, you know, unemployment's the lowest, but we need to do more for unemployment.
And obesity is apparently the lowest in like 30 years. I don't think that's true at all.
Because of Michelle Obama, exactly. So
yeah,
he said obesity rates
wrong.
they fell for the first time in 30 years. And he openly gave the Let's Move program credit for that, which is pretty remarkable to me. So.
Is it better than not doing anything, though?
Well, look,
at least she's doing something to try to help, right?
It's McDonald's fault.
I don't object at all, and Jordan will know why I don't object at all to the Let's Move campaign, because it's not paid for with federal taxpayer dollars. And so you can do whatever you'd like with your own wealth or influence. I think I'm all for that. I just thought it was funny to hear, you know, just the manipulation of the numbers. And then, you know, 30 states have established a minimum wage, but we need a federal minimum wage. I'm like, well, if it's reached that many states, for crying out loud, why do we have to nationalize it? I mean, he kept what's the word I'm looking for? He kept turning on himself, you know, he kept
Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I just thought it was funny because you know, he would make a comment and then his next sentence would like undercut that, and I just thought, what in the world? It was funny.
Well, the last time I checked, 30 is not 50. So
no, 57. President Obama said 57 states in 2008 on the campaign trail.
Yes, he did say
so
that.
So we are past halfway.
And, and guess what? And conservatives are still hammering him about that. You know, 6 years later.
He so rarely
Where
makes a mistake.
We
have to seize
first.
On those few opportunities.
Exactly. I'm glad you admitted it.
So what do you think about like the minimum wage being raised? Because I personally feel like it's just going to make things more expensive and it's not going to help us at all. But then people need a raised minimum wage. I'd like more money. But if I'm paying for more stuff, I feel like that wouldn't help me at all. So.
I think this is all Jordan, folks.
If McDonald's can raise its CEO salary by like millions of dollars, then they can pay their employees $3 more an hour and not have to raise the price of a Big Mac. You look at places like Australia and other places in Europe where they have $10, $11, $12 minimum wages and the prices of goods still stay relatively the same to over here. So that's not an argument that really holds much economic weight. What they do in Australia, which I actually like the idea of as well, is they have a minimum wage that's based on age. So yes, if you're working at a minimum wage job at 16, you might get paid just a certain amount, whereas if you're working at a minimum wage job at 30 and 35 and you're actually trying to support someone on that wage, you would get paid a little bit more. I like that idea. Of course, I'm sure Dr. K will hate it, but we'll see what he has to say.
He'll get paid more because he's older than us, so he's happy about that.
Dr. K, did you catch all
everything.
That?
He probably gets more than minimum
I hate
wage.
Australia. I hate everything.
Dr. K is the human version of old man yells at clouds.
Get off my lawn.
You know, I'm not a fan of the minimum wage, period. And I tell you, I think there's a problem here. I said that mostly to provoke Jordan, which is always fun.
Yeah, of course.
You know, one of the issues I have with it is, you know, and I say the minimum wage, period. I wonder what you guys think, including Jordan, which is unusual because usually I don't care what you think. But
that's so nice. No,
he expects
we're right back in the swing of
he'll
things.
He'll dish it right back. And he knows I'm kidding. That's why he's on the show. The jump is pretty extraordinary. And that's what strikes me. And my wife and I had this conversation because she's a big fan of organized labor. She's much more liberal than I am about wage supports and stuff. And we remember a time, and it's funny because I don't remember much because it was a long time ago because I'm really old.
Really old?
I remember that a minimum wage regularly creeping up. Every couple, 3 years, they'd add a quarter, 35 cents. And the minimum wage hasn't gone up in many, many years. And now he's proposing this leap from, what, 7.45 up to 10.10.
7.25, I think is there.
And I think it's a pretty dramatic jump. And a jump that dramatic could make a difference. And I'll put it in perspective. There are some companies, and I think there's this thinking on the left that folks just think the companies have the movie, the companies have the money, they're just being cheap and not sharing it with their workers. Jordan's nodding his head.
Wait a minute. You used an interesting phrase, could made a difference. That almost sounds like you're sort of supporting this notion because that's a positive denotation of that.
Well, so here's the difference. It depends on the company. So ExxonMobil has $40 billion in the bank. Apple has more money than all but six or seven countries. I think $80 billion in cash. Look, they could afford to pay more. Now, the irony is those companies with that much money in the bank don't pay anybody minimum wage. Go to the shale up northwest of Fort Worth. Go to Midland and try to rent an apartment. I mean, the money's flowing from ExxonMobil and those companies. Nobody's getting anywhere near minimum wage. They're well above that. Small businesses.
No, if you work for Apple, you're working in a Chinese sweatshop. You're making quarters on the hour. That's an entirely different twilight zone to enter.
You're just talking about the people who manufacture Apple's devices and how important are they? Come on, I'm talking
about. Yes, they're very important, which is why they should
software development.
They should also have a living wage. But again, that's a whole other can.
Well, and that's a valid point, but Apple workers actually do get paid more. And then they recently had a protest just last year that led
Apple
to...
Apple had a protest?
They did in the manufacturing plants in China, and they now have better conditions and increased wages. They're still nowhere near minimum wage U.S.
Did the Apple protest start and then take 10 minutes to fully load and then start working?
How long did it take for a man to stop a tank in the middle of the road during that Chinese little insurrection?
Just a second. Just
but,
1 second.
But what do you think of the idea of like they do in Australia where it's based on age, whereas if you're a 16-year-old working at, say, McDonald's, they could legally pay you, say, $7.25, whereas if you're 35, they'd have to pay you $10.10.
Well, I think it should be based on your experience, not your age, because there's like maybe 50-year-olds that haven't worked a day in their life, or maybe like lazy people that just don't want a job.
I cannot believe she's throwing me under the bus.
But the idea...
Dr. K, I mean, he doesn't work at all. He doesn't do anything. He just sits and does a radio show, so he shouldn't get paid more than me.
I did two radio shows today.
Two
does
radio
that count?
Shows.
The idea is, though, is that if you're 16, you're less likely to be supporting an entire family. You're more likely to be in, say, a Paul Ryan situation where you're just working over the summer because you want to make a couple of extra bucks. Whereas if you're 35 or 40...
Paul Ryan has a summer job to make...
Yes, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan has always tried to point out to people that the minimum wage is fine because he worked at McDonald's during the summer to earn a little bit of extra money. Paul Ryan living in his own bizarro world.
Never work at McDonald's if you don't want
to
eat it again.
Whereas if you're 35 and 40, you're more likely to have this job because you're actually trying to support a family. I think that's a nice balanced compromise. Now, it does raise the question of, well, wouldn't companies just hire more young people? That might be a drawback to it, but I think that's something that would have to be studied more to see how companies would really react to that.
Well, I think that's an interesting plan, and I don't object to it categorically. I mean, I think that's intriguing, and I like Caitlin's idea better to base it on experience. What's more important to me, and I think more relevant, is it depends on the company. And so I gave you the two examples of the companies that don't have to wrestle with the minimum wage. The other side of that coin are small businesses that employ a handful of people, and maybe the owner's margin is $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, which is his yearly profit. That's what he lives on. That's his salary. And a jump in the minimum wage that he has to pay to three employees, I think in a situation like that, if his wages are going to drop from 60 to 40, that small business owner has maybe a couple, three choices. He can lay somebody off. He can move people to part-time. Or he can try to raise more revenue by increasing the cost of his product, which is a gamble. And so I think there are businesses that will be compromised and may be hurt by the minimum wage. And John Boehner, your favorite person on Capitol Hill, He rolled his eyes. I'm just sharing with you because it's highly entertaining to be in the room with Jordan when you're doing the show. But Boehner said, look, how many jobs is the minimum wage going to create? I got a pretty good idea, and it's somewhere around zero. And so I don't know. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's not. Now,
Most economists disagree with him, but, you know, whatever.
Well, in an argument, he knows.
An
argument that got made by an analyst on CNN after the State of the Union, and I thought this was insightful, too. And again, this is something I had not thought of. But I thought was interesting. If you raise the minimum wage, all of a sudden poor people are making some more money. And do poor people take their raises and invest it in 401ks or save it up to buy a Mercedes? No, they blow every cent they get the instant they get it because they just have to get food, pay the light bill. And that money immediately rolls back into the economy. There's an argument to be made that if you do raise the minimum wage, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and I'm waiting to see how Jordan reacts. If you raise the minimum wage and all of a sudden everybody who was getting $7.25 an hour is getting $10.10 an hour, a lot more money flows into the economy. And guess what? You don't get layoffs. You don't get people shifting to part-time because every company has a little more money rolling in because all these people are spending their extra $2.50 an hour.
Unless they raise their prices, in which case it just is the same thing.
I mostly oppose it because, you know, I'm Republican and we're just me.
he just wants people to starve to death.
Now, Dr. K,
I'm only
living on ramen.
Now, Dr. K, you've got me curious because this study here, is it based purely on theoretical? Because I'm interested in seeing this study because it seems more on a theoretical assumption rather than actual proof since this situation hasn't happened before.
Well, and that's the idea. It's an analyst. It's an economist saying he thinks this is what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, but I hate to throw you under the bus, Dr. K, but
no,
I mean—
No, you don't.
basing it purely on speculation is not the best. Well, it is an empirical data, so I can't say it's a good study.
No, I think the available data, and I've argued this for years. When you have an economic policy, and we'll just take the two big theories. You know, one is Keynesian
and classical economics,
and then so you've got this tension between: do you pump money into the economy to support it artificially, or do you get out of the way and let private sector come in and hopefully rescue you? And there's always been this tension, dating back to 1929, and I've always argued, and this is interesting, but if you went to select states, maybe a couple of states, maybe Alabama and Massachusetts, and got the consent of the citizens in those states and said, we want to try in your state to get government out of the way and go heavily private sector and just see if the market can fix itself. And then in your state, presumably Massachusetts, we'd like to do enormous infusions of government supports. And then we can analyze the data and see if one works better. Minimum wage, what's interesting, you can never do that because there's an argument that it's immoral. From my perspective at a university, no research board would ever approve a study like that. But if 30 states have a minimum wage higher than the federal minimum wage, there may be data available to look at this and see what the impact is.
Well, Dr. K, that's very interesting. But as I'm sure you're aware of, in economic situations, especially when it comes to state-to-state basis, not all results are going to be congruently the same. I mean—
Are you saying there are differences, underlying differences?
Yes,
between,
Dr.
Say,
K,
Alabama,
I am.
Massachusetts?
I am,
I'm
absolutely.
Stunned.
But the way I look at it is sort of just bringing back a history nod because we're talking about economics. When South America first started off in the world economy, it started off as completely completely capitalist in every essence. Then it switched to a more Keynesian economic cycle in order to preserve its market. Then it switched back to free capitalism. So I'd argue that both systems can work given the right circumstances. But for the actual study to break it down, it'd be interesting to see what the results are.
Listen, Republicans had 8 years of Ronald Reagan where they saw firsthand that trickle-down economics didn't work, and yet George W. Bush still tried 8 more years of it. So the idea that Republicans would look at facts and results to determine what they do in their economic policy, we already know that's not going to happen.
Jordan, have I told you how much I missed you? I really did, man.
Bromance.
I've missed doing this. This is fun. I enjoy pointing out every opportunity I possibly can that Dr. K has absolutely no idea what he's talking about.
Not while he's in the room. He's out somewhere doing something.
If you had been in a couple of our classes last year, you would know even when he was in the room, I like taking shots at him. It's fun.
My goodness. What class do you have with him?
Oh, he taught news presentation too. It was a lot of fun. He's a great teacher. He knows nothing about politics, but he's a great teacher. So everyone out there listening can know that. At least I did give him a compliment about his teaching.
Well, that's...
Way to advertise.
Yeah.
But back to the State of the Union. Like I said earlier, I thought it was a good speech, but I don't see any of this happening because
It's you're too not, short of a period.
You're not going to change the Republicans overnight. You know, these people are not going to become intelligent overnight.
Wow. So
you're not going to suddenly convince them, oh, yeah, this is common sense. Perhaps we should do some of these things.
But
you know?
Remember, that's he blamed most of everything on Congress, saying that Congress wasn't working and Congress needs to do a better job.
He got
to
5.5
things.
Minutes before he started dissing Republicans. You know, exactly. So.
But Congress isn't working. I mean, that's...
It
just,
takes two to tango. Come on.
That's just fact.
No,
absolutely
you.
Not. When one side refuses to compromise, how can you claim that they're doing any work?
When one side refuses to tango, you mean?
Well, no. Yes.
When one side puts up 40 useless votes to repeal a law that's already in place that they know has no chance of passing, instead of actually working on legislation that might pass, instead of working on negotiating, how can you blame anyone but them?
It's like a marriage. I mean, Dr. K is the only one in the room who's married, so what do you feel about that?
My wife's voted against me at least 30 times.
So exactly. See, there you go.
Not even close. So there are two sides to this, and you could argue, and it's I love how Jordan phrases it, which is, you know, one side is intransigent, one side won't compromise. And if you ask the Republicans on Capitol Hill, they said that's exactly right. President Obama will not compromise. And he openly said, and he's done this more than once. He did it at the quote healthcare summit, where it was a dog and pony show for the TV cameras in the White House, and Paul Ryan ticked him off, and he's never liked him since. And, you know, he's had a couple of shows like this where he, quote, negotiated. And when they walked in the door, he said to John Boehner, and Boehner came out and admitted this later, he said, look, I walk in the door, and he goes, look, I'm not dealing on this or that. Get over it. What are we talking about? I mean, that's walking in the door. Now, the Republicans clearly have been partisan and intransigent, and I'm going to freely admit it. And they've done it before. They did it with Bill Clinton. The Democrats tried to do it with W. That's why W amped up... Sorry, it's with endearment. It's like Obamacare. It's a term of endearment. W dramatically increased recess appointments because they had an intransigent Democrat party. I'm not saying Democrats started it. Republicans may have started it. It may have started with Democrats under Reagan. It's not a new thing. It's getting worse. And look, they're not compromising. A legitimate argument in the president's favor is it's 2014. There's a big midterm election. There's a fight over the Senate. It's just a few seat margin. And I guarantee you Republicans aren't going to compromise this summer. Have you heard any of the ads from like John Cornyn or Randy Neugebauer, the radio ads? And
I've seen one of Randy Neugebauer's TV ads, and 30 seconds in, I had felt my IQ drop 10 points, so I turned it off.
Nice. John Cornyn's ad comes out, and he says stuff like, I love this because I normally don't confess to the dog whistle. I normally get annoyed when people argue, oh, it's a dog whistle, which means it's some kind of cue to you that you're supposed to add up the schema and know that the guy's being racist. And since you're racist, you'll vote for him. And that viscerally offends me as a Republican. And then my problem with it is John Cornyn comes out and goes, there's something wrong in Washington. You know it. And I'm like, wow, really? And I'm supposed to argue we're not getting dog whistles from Republican candidates? And,
Dr. K, he's speaking directly to my intuition.
Okay.
I mean, I felt that.
Appreciate that, Matthew.
Well, it's the same way that the Republicans last night have such, how dare President Obama, how dare he sign executive orders? I mean, how dare he do what every other president before him has done? How dare he?
Hey, let's talk about executive orders because I love this. I love this story. Jordan, you want to take a guess? I won't pick on Jordan because he'll know. So,
Caitlin, you always pick on Jordan.
Caitlin or Matthew, I pick on everybody. The executive orders, because the president said, in fact, we may have, well, let me see if, by the way, Derek enters here, so the plane will stay airborne for the next hour, which is awesome. So general manager of the station, sir. Do we have I have a pen, the President Obama statement from last week? Okay, let me give a listen.
We are not just going to be waiting for legislation in order to make sure that we're providing Americans the kind of help that they need. I've got a pen and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward in helping to make sure our kids are getting the best education possible, making sure that our businesses are getting the kind of support and help they need to grow and advance. To make sure that people are getting the skills that they need to get those jobs that our businesses are creating. And I've got a phone that allows me to convene Americans from every walk of life, nonprofits, businesses, the private sector, universities, to try to bring more and more Americans together around what I think is a unifying theme, making sure that this is a country where if you work hard, you can make it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was one of his themes last night.
Have a pen.
Exactly. No, but this is interesting. Where do you think the president falls on executive orders? By the way, there's a thing floating around in email that says President Obama has issued nearly 1,000 executive orders, far more than any other administration, that it is a loose cannon and it's a coup and all this kind of language.
But how many of those actually?
And that's
through?
A lie.
I'll give you a hint. I learned about that from Snopes, so that already tells you that it's wrong. And Snopes did confirm that it's wrong. Where do you think? Let's look at, the last, since World War II, just about, or the last half of the 20th century to now, where do you think the president falls on use of executive orders as compared to W, Bill Clinton, George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan? Well, he's used more or fewer than W?
I'm guessing it's going to be something against the president, knowing you. So I'm guessing higher, maybe?
George
higher
is confused because every
oh,
so
no,
often.
Oh, no, actually, I'm not confused. I know very good well that he's actually behind W. He's behind the first George Bush. He's behind Bill Clinton. He's behind Ronald Reagan.
Who do you think had the most executive orders in the last 50 years?
Well, I wasn't alive 50 years ago, so I can't make a fair judgment.
See, she's throwing me under the bus again. Jordan, take a gleeful guess. Who's had by far the most executive orders of any president in the last 50 years?
Oh, I'm thinking it's Ronald Reagan.
I'm sorry. Whenever he says Reagan's name, I have to.
You mean Saint Reagan of small government used executive orders? What is this hearsay? You should be burned at the stake for saying such blasphemous lies.
381. The last president to use that many was Dwight Eisenhower, coming out of World War II, for crying out loud. So, yeah, Reagan had by far the most. Reagan 382. Obama 167. Obama's still 124 behind W. W used a lot more. Bill Clinton used more than twice as many as Barack Obama so far.
And I'm about to blow the biggest dog whistle of all. What's the one difference between Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama?
The party affiliation. Yeah, that's it.
Actually,
horizontal?
Actually, depends on if you're talking about the Ronald Reagan that actually was president or the Ronald Reagan that Republicans and conservatives have turned into a demigod.
Yes,
because if you actually look at his record, those two things are completely different.
And he worked much better with Congress. Now, again, I think that was to the credit of both Congress and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
maybe
but
just
who
the
has
era,
a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Yeah, that's right. Obama doesn't
have a star.
Win
one for the Gipper.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting because that came up and the Republicans are all up in arms about executive orders. And, of course, I did what I do, which is I'm going to look up the numbers. And there they are. So I like to do that. I like for you to be informed with your argument out there in the audience, even if it opposes my argument. So
this is America. We don't like facts. We like emotion.
Random sort of change of subject. Thanks to Google, my lovely friend, apparently there is a State of the Union drinking game. So if you haven't watched it yet, I suggest trying that.
Oh, no, that's been around forever. I was really disappointed because, as you know, I'm Irish. And so something
awesome.
Jordan and I share in common. I was all excited to slam a shot every single time I heard income inequality. And I mean, man, they were lined up. And I had vodka and whiskey. I was ready to rock. And he alluded repeatedly to income inequality, but never once strung those two dang words together. And it just completely ruined my drinking game.
The president spited you. That makes this that much better.
I've been sober at least since the weekend. And I'm just really disappointed. Because
somehow I don't believe that.
He has coffee with him. So what's actually in there?
It's coffee. Yeah.
It's an Irish coffee.
It's coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Irish and it's coffee. That's all you need to know. We do have some snippets. Should we take a break and then come back and listen to some excerpts from the State of the Union and from the Republican response? We do have the Republican response. I know Jordan wants to hear that because I know he didn't listen to it last night. Yeah, I called it. Let's do this. Let's take a little break. And we have some special break music coming up for you later in the show. We'll tell you why later. This was at the request of Jordan. But we'll be back in a couple minutes on The Devil's Advocate.
So you can't see their fears. They blacken your eyes and then apologize. Be daddy's good girl and don't tell mommy a thing. Be a good little boy and you'll get a new toy. So grandma, you fell off the swing. Because hell, hell is for children.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocate on KTXT 88.1 The Raider. You can also join the social media conversation on Twitter, The Raider 88.1. Sorry, my bad. Facebook / The Raider 88.1. And we appreciate your joining us, hanging out here, coming to you live from the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University. Before I forget, something important. Siri cannot spell Boehner. I'm just saying. So.
Who can?
Just jumped out at me. Yeah, exactly.
I have to ask, was anybody else afraid that he was going to break down and start sobbing when President Obama made the reference to him being the son of a barkeep being Speaker of the House? I thought the whole State of the Union was going to have to come to a stop because Boehner was going to have a 15-minute cry session.
Yeah, it was close, so... He is. He's very emotional. So I guess we should give a listen. This is a little snippet of the 1 hour and 4 minute State of the Union, which, God, I wish I'd thought of this earlier. We could have just rerun it, and then we could have skipped the show and gone drinking. That would have been perfect.
Take shots.
But we'll give a minute and a half or so to the president last week, and here's what he talked about.
For several years now, this town has been consumed by a rancorous argument over the proper size of the federal government. It's an important debate, one that dates back to our very founding. But when that debate prevents us from carrying out even the most basic functions of our democracy, when our differences shut down government or threaten the full faith and credit of the United States, then we are not doing right by the American people. Today, after 4 years of economic growth, corporate profits and stock prices have rarely been higher. And those at the top have never done better. But average wages have barely budged. Inequality has deepened. Upward mobility has stalled. The cold hard fact is that even in the midst of recovery, too many Americans are working more than ever just to get by, let alone to get ahead. And too many still aren't working at all. So our job is to reverse these trends. It won't happen right away, and we won't agree on everything. But what I offer tonight is a set of concrete, practical proposals to speed up growth, strengthen the middle class, and build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class. Some require congressional action, and I am eager to work with all of you. But America does not stand still, and neither will I. So wherever and whenever I can take steps without legislation to expand opportunity for more American families, that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, there you go. We need more opportunities. We need more opportunities for American families, and that's what he's going to do, which is kind of ironic because I love it, because every 6 months or so he comes out and says, we're going to have a laser-like focus on one issue, jobs. And I keep thinking, okay, it's been 5 years. I've heard this at least 10 times. When are you going to start focusing
on jobs? Dr. K, I don't think that's ironic. I think what you're trying to say is it's just wrong.
Okay, yeah, exactly. That's more like it.
Well, so. Unemployment is the lowest it's been in a while, so.
Yeah.
And guess who hasn't been any help in having that happen?
Well, I'm still unemployed, so I don't care.
You know why it's – no, look, the reason is it's because nearly half of employable Americans have stopped looking for work, dropped out of the workforce. You know, the workforce participation rate is the lowest it's been since Jimmy Carter was the president, for crying out loud. It's a national embarrassment. It's just humiliating. It's appalling. And for the number to be argued, 6.7. So on my foot, it's more like 13%. I mean, that number's a ruse. It's ridiculous.
Well, if people aren't looking for work, I mean, he plans on expanding welfare and, you know, benefits for people who aren't looking for work, who are, you know, below the poverty line. And so that's just an incentive to keep them at the poverty line.
Keep them out of work. Derek's not looking for work. I'm not looking for work. I'm telling you, these policies are ruinous. I was waiting for somebody to catch that.
How do you even respond to something so out there?
Just for crying out loud.
Most people,
so factual? You can't handle that?
No, okay. We know that most people, they don't want to be on welfare. You can't honestly tell me that a majority of the population wants to be on welfare.
I never said a majority.
And, okay, so there you go. So are you
that
willing
was Caitlin's
to,
argument,
are you
not
willing,
mine.
Are you
hey,
willing
I'm just trying
to
be controversial.
Hey, my generation sucks. I'll be the first to admit that.
It does not.
I have no problem admitting that. My generation is terrible.
Against some.
Most.
I'm awesome.
All you have to do is watch the Grammys and see what kind of music we listen to
these
days.
But have you paid any attention to the baby boomers? The baby boomers are spending your money. I mean, it's appalling. So come on.
Yes, and unfortunately, part of that is also that a lot of those people that have stopped looking for work are baby boomers because they're just deciding to retire because they can't find jobs. That's also where part of the drain's coming from. But look, the president's tried to pass jobs bills in Congress, and how has that worked for him? Oh, wait, it hasn't because the Republicans have blocked everything.
Yeah, but his jobs bills always involve lots and lots and lots of billions of dollars of federal spending. Why must jobs come from the federal government? And by the way, I don't think one bridge has been fixed yet.
Because the private sector has done such a great job, too. 8 years of George W., they sure created a lot of jobs, didn't they?
They did okay for like 7 years, and then it all crashed and burned.
Considering where the economy was when Bill Clinton left office, I don't think you can really say they did a good job for 7 years when things were steadily declining.
You're not counting Halliburton, which employed millions of people during those two wars.
So. Oh, yeah, those two wars. That's exactly where I want my employment to be.
Blow
people up for jobs.
Homeland Security was started by Bush.
Obama said that he's hoping that everyone will be out of Afghanistan by 2014. I thought that was supposed to happen like 2 years ago, then 4 years ago, and when he started his presidency.
At least he closed down the Guantanamo detention center some years ago. I remember that was one of his promises. That must have happened a long time ago. So,
so half-baked promises, I guess, still work.
A politician making a half-baked promise.
Yeah, there's a shock.
Color me shocked.
Okay, so as long as we're on that topic, let's listen to the Republican response from Kathy McMorris Rogers. You know why she was paid? Does everybody know why she was chosen?
She's a woman.
Okay. I was about to say that.
I was
going
to say, I'd love to say it's because she's the fourth ranking Republican in the House.
Gosh, so sexist.
And she is. Boehner's the Speaker. Eric Cantor from Virginia moved up from whip to majority leader. There's a new whip, and that leaves McMorris Rogers as fourth in the House. But the real reason is, she should have come out and said, Republicans really don't hate women, at least not all of them. Look at me. And I think that should have been her message. But let's go ahead and give a listen to the Republican response.
Because our mission, not only as Republicans, but as Americans, is to once again ensure that we are not bound by where we come from, but empowered by what we can become. That is the gap Republicans are working to close. It's the gap we all face. Between where you are and where you want to be. The president talks a lot about income inequality, but the real gap we face today is one of opportunity inequality. And with this administration's policies, that gap has become far too wide. We see this gap growing every single day. We see it in our neighbors who are struggling to find jobs, a husband who's now working just part-time, a child who drops out of college because she can't afford tuition, or parents who are outliving their life savings. Last month, more Americans stopped looking for a job than found one. Too many people are falling further and further behind because right now, the president's policies are making people's lives harder. Republicans have plans to close the gap, plans that will focus on jobs first without more spending, government bailouts, and red tape. Every day, we're working to expand our economy, one manufacturing job, nursing degree, and small business at a time. We have plans to improve our education and training systems so you have the choice to determine where your kids go to school, so college is affordable and skills training is modernized.
We need some modernized skills training around here so I can learn some new stuff and keep my job. So, yeah, it was just so funny. I wish you could have seen it. Jordan was like throwing himself back in his chair and throwing his hands up.
Yes, because hysterical. The Republicans' job plan is the same as their health care plan. It's non-existent. They like to throw stones and say, oh, the president's doing this. It's so terrible. Give us your alternative. What's their alternative? There's none. You can't just say, oh, let the private sector fix it. No, we gave it that shot. It's not working. You actually have to give us a concrete plan. Give us something.
Can't we shut down 3 federal agencies and just see if that increases employment? I think it might work.
Yeah,
it could happen.
Where's the independent party responses? I want to know what they think personally.
They weren't in the room last night.
They're not relevant.
You do know that had government employment has actually gone down under President Obama, federal employment has, and had it stayed level, his recovery would be even better than the recovery under Ronald Reagan, whereas
actually,
federal employment went way up under Ronald Reagan, and that's the reason why the recovery in the 80s went so quickly.
Actually, government employment has fallen in states and municipalities, but it has increased dramatically among the feds. So federal employment is actually up. And I'll remind you, one of our favorite topics for me and Anna last semester, 7 of the highest income counties, seven of the 10 highest income counties in the country are right in suburban Maryland, Virginia, all around D.C. And just in 2007, it was 1 or 2. And now it's most of the wealthiest counties in the country.
So let's move there.
And 13 of the poorest states in the country all have Republican governors and overwhelming Republican legislation.
But they don't, by God, have income taxes. And their senators talk about guns.
And they take the most money away from the country. So Essentially, what we're arguing is that nobody knows anything. Both sides suck.
Welcome to politics.
Where we're at.
I think I may agree with Jordan all of a sudden. So,
we can all
Derek
run for
Congress. Was very insightful
Congress.
And said Detroit who. So just a thought. Just saying. We did talk about Detroit on the show before.
We did, and it was a riot.
It was, oh my God, yeah. Talk about a third world country right here in the U.S. It was unbelievable. So, you know, I think in D.C. lights get fixed and police actually respond to emergency calls still. So it's a little bit better than Detroit. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I'll tell you one of my favorite things, and this is a complete aside as a professional communicator who has beaten at least Caitlin and Jordan over the head with this message. One of the things I loved about President Obama's speech last night, and I saw glimpses of it with Bill Clinton, I saw it often with Ronald Reagan, I never saw a hint of it with George W. Bush, was the president was just really colloquial. I love that. Just when you can come out and sort of chat, and look over your shoulder, and the speaker gives you a thumbs up, and you know, you're like, come on, we can do better. I love that kind of language, just that sort of, I just think it's more accessible than the
sort of rhetoric. Or Biden's making faces behind you.
You know,
but he's just saying the obvious, what people already know, that we can do better. I mean, he's supposed to be optimistic and tell us.
But it's the way he says it is what I'm getting at. It's like very conversational, very accessible, very down, like you're sitting in a cafe and he's telling you about it. He's like he wasn't reading the prompter. I always love when the State of the Union is like that.
We're really going to enter the bizarro world now, because I'm going to take part of the opposite and say, I thought the speech was way way too long. I thought,
aren't they always?
No, but in certain years you can watch and it feels just about right. I don't think a speech like that should ever last more than 45 minutes. It was over an hour. It was too long. I think you lose people. I think if you're really trying to get your message out to the average American, you can have their attention for maybe 15, 20 minutes. So you have to have a solid 15, 20 minutes where what you're saying is really what the point you want to get across.
So basically, your logic is that all college classes should be about 20 to 30 minutes because students just have a glazed over look whenever they listen to lectures.
You know, the first short sort of soaring leader speech ever in history was the Gettysburg Address.
Yes, by Abraham Lincoln. And I had to do that in, I had
he
to
was
recite
there.
It in middle school.
Yeah, and people were shocked and dismayed and horrified that he just quit talking far, far too soon because they were all expecting upwards of 60 minutes. And you know, at that time in the 19th century, that was the show you paid for and went to enjoy. And he just thought it was too somber a moment, too somber an occasion to waste it with that kind of sort rhetoric. I'm laughing because I sat and kind of hung on every word and, as usual, was yelling at my television for the entire hour and 4 minutes. So,
but to be fair, Dr. K yells at his television when the State of the Union isn't on. He just likes yelling at his television.
If local or national news is on, Jordan's exactly right. I often yell at my television.
Even when he hasn't
funny.
Had alcohol in him yet?
When have I not had... Oh, no, wait, sorry.
No, you need to check your eyes.
I hung in there easily for an hour and four and then stayed for the Republican response, and I yelled at her, too. It was pretty funny. So, but yeah, the Republican response was entirely because, you know, she's a woman and Republicans don't hate women, just some. So
now, if they want you to see a woman when they're giving you a transvaginal ultrasound.
Wow.
Yeah, you just have to have a look before you make that decision. So, exactly. You know, we're not standing in the way. We just want you to be informed. So I understand.
We want the government out of your healthcare decisions.
But in okay, never mind. Yeah, exactly. I got it. I'm dying to get in before it gets too stale. The Senator Mitch McConnell. Who's Senator Mitch McConnell? Jordan?
That would be Senator Huckleberry Hound from Kentucky.
Exactly. It was funny because, and I played this last year on the show. You guys will remember we had the on the brink, the debt ceiling, and there was a negotiation at the White House, and the White House was pushing. And I talked openly on the show about this at the time. This is a bit of an aside, but the president did talk openly about we finally got a budget, which I think is kind of ironic because Democrats in the House and Senate refused to bring a budget up for consideration for 5 years, which I think is just appalling. And then they complained because there was no budget. They were simply using continuing resolutions and riding along on the previous year's funding for 5 years. I mean, it's just obscene and frankly in violation of the Constitution, which requires them to bring up a budget. But the president was talking about this great budget deal that we got between Paul Ryan and Patty Murray in the Senate who negotiated this deal. And what bugged me is when the first budget negotiation was going on last fall, Republicans made a big deal of saying we are not going to compromise on the sequester. The sequester is in place. It's law. The president reopened it, pushed hard to get the sequester broken. And here's what Mitch McConnell had to say at the time, Senator Hound. Here were his comments about the budget back then.
For the first time since the Korean War, government spending has declined for 2 years in a row, the first time in 50 years. And we're not going back on this agreement. This legislation is the largest spending reduction bill of the last quarter century and the largest deficit reduction bill since 1981 that didn't include a tax hike. Preserving this law is critically important to the future of our country.
So Senator McConnell was bragging openly and proudly about having cut the budget 2 years in a row for the first time in, how long was it? 50 years. No tax increase. Basically, because of the sequester, Republicans got finally through brute force, got every damn thing they wanted. And what happened? Paul Ryan gave it all away. And it just hacks me off. And this is the budget the president was bragging about last night. The sequester cuts were a whole 2% of government. And now the, quote, cuts are less than 1%. And it just bugged the snot out of me that he was bragging about this. And then here's the president bragging last night that, guess what? We didn't use the word sequester, but we blew that up with help from Paul Ryan and the Republicans. So the, quote, draconian budget that the president talked about last night, cuts to education, et cetera, which was BS, because it was just cuts to increases. All of that's out the window now. And the president was gleeful talking about, oh, we finally cut a budget deal. And I was screaming at my television when he said that last night.
You know, I love some Republicans' responses, especially Ted Cruz recently. You know, he's been asked by journalists about his role in the government shutdown. And he's like, it's been 4 months. Just stop bugging me. You know, it's still an issue. People still care about it. But he's like, just back off, people. And I'm just like, I don't know.
Because Ted Cruz is an idiot. He is an idiot. Let's just put it out there. This is the man. No, he's still trying to claim, I had nothing to do with the government shutdown. Please.
Welcome to politics.
Please.
He's
are
a Texan. There are smart people in Texas, don't you think?
Yes,
from Louisiana.
There are a lot of smart people in Texas.
Just not
Ted
in this room.
Ted Cruz
Wait.
Is not one of them.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, so what about Marco Rubio? I mean, he hasn't been...
Coffee break.
We're reaching up. Two sentences, man. It's too hard.
I had to shuffle across the room and get a big gulp of water. That was a pay-in to Marco Rubio's speech last year.
Makes Wendy Davis's filibuster all the more impressive when Marco Rubio couldn't get through 10 minutes
impressive.
Of a State of the Union.
I so wish you had been here when we talked about Wendy Davis. And
it was
the,
great. I loved it.
That was pretty funny. We had a good time talking about that one. That was an aside. So should we take another little break, and then we'll come back and talk as quickly as we can about the Ukraine and the really important breaking news, which Jordan's excited about. So we'll have a little music. I don't know if this music's going to be a hint at what's coming up or if it's later. Okay, so we'll get to that in a bit. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate on the Raider 88.1 KTXT here at the College of Media and Communication. Dr. Kelly Koffel, Dr. K, coming to you here. I have Jordan Legend and Caitlin Osborne here from, did I pronounce it right? Jordan Legend?
Okay.
I overemphasize the D, my bad. And Caitlin Osborne from Journalism here with us. And Matthew Riley, the only person from Political Science who was not on the C-SPAN bus yesterday morning on Washington
there was
Journal.
A C-SPAN
did you hear
bus?
About that? Did they advertise that pretty widely over there? So there were what, 300-400 students on there? No, I'm kidding. It was 5. Anna Lavis, by the way, was one of the students on the C-SPAN bus who got to take part in Washington Journal yesterday morning. So
awesome.
That was kind of fun. She was
sure
was on there asking questions. I'm sure it was. God bless you, Jordan. So So yeah, we
God bless.
Oh God, cardiac. He's falling. Quick, we got to stop and do CPR. We better play some music.
I don't think I'm qualified for that.
Yeah. The power of Christ compels.
We'll get to that later.
Jordan looks a little like a dove in St. Peter's Square. We'll explain that coming up in a minute. But Ukraine is continuing to boil. What I think is interesting about this, a couple things. So I think there is going to be blowback from this, and it may end up in some way influencing I don't know who for the Olympics, even though it's 1,000 miles away. But the other thing is, and Jordan and I'm sorry, Matthew and I were talking about this before the show. This protest erupted in December in Ukraine, and it's been kind of boiling up, and it's led at this point to open arduous negotiations between the leadership of the country and the protesters and the leadership of the opposition. And it's fascinating for anybody who lived through the Cold War to think that this could happen in this part of the country, because
Dr. K, you have made a clear error first off starting off. You said that there would be a blowback.
That's a first.
You said there would be a blowback. Dr. K, we have had a building taken over, a prime minister resignation. If this isn't a blowback, I don't know what is.
In Soviet protest starts huge.
I mean in Sochi, not there. I mean at the Olympics. I'm worried about some kind of blowback.
Well, okay, I understand that. But I mean, geez, this situation has escalated far above. I was not even aware that apparently, I just learned right now, the opposition seized the Justice Ministry building, which was that before or after the Prime Minister resigned?
Oh, no, this is after the Prime Minister resigned.
My goodness.
And the opposition leader has been offered the role of Prime Minister, which, again, is just to think about
that is
these,
compromise.
These regimes and their history. I mean, this is remarkable. You know, this is like, I can't think of another. It's analogous to, you know, I'm thinking of not Fidel. I'm trying to think of who's in charge now. Raul Castro.
His brother, yes.
Going and saying, Raul letting some people out of prison and saying, hey, we'd like to give you an equal role in government. It's just unheard of in this part of the world. Derek for the theme music that went perfectly. Yeah, goes with two topics.
How long before it comes out that the U.S. had some role in this?
See, I'm wondering about that. When are they going to start to interfere? Because, we've got Syria, we've got the Ukraine now. When's World War III going to happen?
Look, you guys are about 3 months behind. Putin in a predictable moment already.
Leader that never dies.
Shirtless and on a horse.
Already accused foreign powers of having some influence in this. Now,
I blame the NSA, personally.
Who doesn't these days? But that apparently several leaders, Angela Merkel, President Obama, have both supported this revolution. Of course they would. And President Putin has been like, no, it was them. They instigated it. The West is evil.
We support revolutions until people start dying and blowing up stuff and bothering the U.S. And then it's like, wait, we have to stop this.
And
we're still going to supply aid to these countries, but we have to interfere.
We support revolutions when we like the people who are doing the revolutions. When you go to a place like Chile, where we didn't like the revolution, we didn't like the people they put in charge, so we just start shooting bullets.
Because they could never pronounce Pinochet, so that was the issue there.
So is there going to be a Second World War, Cold War and a World War III coming up? I don't know.
I think, regardless of what Putin says, and I know he's a reliable source, I'm sure he always shot straight when he was the KGB chief. It's interesting to me that the U.S. has laid low on this one. I think they'll continue to lay low on this. I don't think they're heartily
involved.
Give
it a month.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the other thing is the unintended consequences, and people forget, but the Mujahideen became Al-Qaeda after the U.S. got involved in Afghanistan. And,
you really can't predict
the future, and really, really, really bad things can happen. And I think you need to be aware of that. So it's interesting. But it's just, to me, having grown up in the 30s and 40s, no, the 70s.
I was like, wait a second.
Through the Cold War, the Iron Curtain and the Eastern Bloc, and to watch this and just to think, my God, only there have been two people killed last week? One or two people killed in some tension?
Yes, I believe so.
That was spontaneous, and the government was upset and backed off and was like, oh my God, this is not good PR for the government. And I'm like, who are these people in charge in the Ukraine?
There's a mayor in Sochi who doesn't believe there are any gay people in his city. Nothing that any human being believes or does these days should surprise you.
God.
Burgermeister.
I'll get in trouble for this. Did anybody see the original Revenge of the Nerds?
No.
Yes.
Okay. Just a cultural reference. I'm thinking about the javelin throwing event in the interfraternity games. Go look it up. I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to get in too much trouble.
It's been a while, Dr.
Could be an event coming to the Sochi Olympics. I'm not sure, but
yikes.
I think what that mayor's done inadvertently, and Putin, by the way, piled on. But I think what they've done is they've brought probably a really active, strong, vocal voice for gay rights to the Sochi Olympics. That's my guess. That's my prediction.
But, I mean, how is it going to affect athletes? Because I know that there are some people who are concerned that American athletes aren't going to compete, or there's, like, alternatives to them, alternates, because, you know, they're against the whole anti-gay
I can't imagine an
athlete. I mean, why would someone give up the Olympics?
I mean, how principled would that be? I would admire them for that, but I would also think, you know, the best thing you can do is what the U.S. did in the 1932 Olympics, go into the belly of the beast and compete and win and celebrate. Maybe, you know, I mean, I just think that's the best thing to do rather than punish yourself. Go in there, win a medal, and punch
them. Dr. K, are you suggesting that the U.S. send specifically a gay athlete over there, have him win the Olympics, and that'll show the world?
Male figure skating.
No, not saying. You make it sound like we're sort of hand selecting gay athletes. Well, I'm saying if the top athlete in some given sport happens to be gay, why in the world should they remove themselves from competition?
Or it doesn't even necessarily have to be a gay person. It could be like, what was it, the 68 games with the Black Power salute. You could do something like that.
No,
so
it can be subtle and important, and you know, and I think that's the way to go, is to just to just go in there. I think that would be a better answer, a better response. So, in speaking of response, because of what's happening in the Ukraine, tensions around the world, Pope Francis came out, and you guys may remember Francis of Assisi was an animal lover, and so he's legendary and portrayed by, I'm sure Jordan has a lot of Catholic
I was raised Catholic, so
imagery around his house.
Yeah, so was I. That doesn't mean much.
Yeah, I'm not Catholic anymore.
Anyway, Pope Francis decided a nice gesture in honor of the protesters in the Ukraine and elsewhere in the world, people under the thumb of oppression and stuff, would be to release a couple of doves as a sign of world peace. And so he stepped out on the balcony in St. Peter's Basilica. Jordan's already laughing, and I'm going to lose it next. And release two doves as a sign of peace and as a sign from God. Something happened to the two doves. They were immediately attacked by a seagull and another bird, and I think attacked and killed and devoured on the spot seconds after their release.
It's the 57th sign of the apocalypse.
I don't know.
Get in your bunkers.
It didn't seem like a very good message.
Dr. K, I'm getting unconfirmed reports that seagull and skull are flying back. Seagull and crow are flying back. Are flying back right now to Moscow in the Kremlin. They are landing in Putin's balcony, and he seems to be smiling.
Birds, it'd be like a hawk or a falcon or some really huge.
I think those birds belong to the Mossad. That's what I'm saying.
If this doesn't prove everything I've said about religion on this show, I don't know what else will. Come on, people, wake up.
Okay.
Wake up.
Yeah, that was just too fun to not share. So,
and what
was
the thing about a parrot now or something? I saw you reading earlier about Pope Francis and a parrot. Decided to get something.
That sounds like the setup of a terrible Monty Python sketch.
Yeah.
No, I know it exists. Pope.
Yeah, an imam, a rabbi, and a priest walk into a bar. Okay, no, last issue, we wanted to say our regrets and a moment of we had our moment of silence last week's show, so I think we're covered, but we've had some technical issues. But Pete Seeger, legendary folk singer, inspiration from the 60s and 70s, passed away at a fairly ripe age, surrounded by family. And I know this touched Jordan greatly. And then there's
he's
crying.
Joking about it, but it's actually very true. I've been listening to Pete Seeger since about 2008. His music was the reason that I decided I wanted to learn how to play the banjo.
Really?
Play the banjo. I taught myself using his book, and I really think Pete was a great example of what an American's supposed to be. If you look back to the 50s and the face of McCarthyism, when he was called in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee, and he told them, I'm not going to plead the fifth because I don't have anything to hide. I'm going to plead the first because it's my right as an American not to tell you who I voted for or who I sang for or what reason I sang the songs for. And I think in this world we live in right now with the NSA and people spying on us constantly, it's a nice reminder of how some people out there have always been willing to stand up for their beliefs. So he was one of those people that I guess naively I sort of thought he would live forever, and I didn't want to have to be around the day when Pete Seeger wasn't on this earth anymore. But at least his music will always be around. I've been listening to him in his car all day. in my car all day, excuse me. And so it's a big loss for the music community. Sorry, I'm going on a bit of a tangent.
Speaking
here,
of music, the Beatles, it's the 50th year this year since they appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Actually, 60th, I think?
No, 50th. Okay, it was January 27th, 1963. No, 64. Yeah, I don't know what year it is. But
yeah, you should have just screamed and held your head and like just screamed wildly, like in the film we see from back then. With the, but yeah, the anniversary of the Beatles, and you know we had to share. So,
and I know, music.
And again, of course, and that Jordan actually greatly. Makes me very happy. On the flip side, because obviously the Beatles are the greatest band of all time. And
some people may disagree. Some people say they're overrated, but I definitely don't think.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, most people have no taste. Those people are stupid.
Listen,
we're classic musical lovers. You
can be an intelligent Republican. You cannot dislike the Beatles and be intelligent. That does not work.
I never thought I'd hear him say you could be an intelligent Republican.
Oh, you absolutely can, but you cannot be an intelligent Beatles hater. It just doesn't work.
Okay, well, so parting thought, and I'll get blowback from this next week, I'm certain, on the show, but I thought you learning to play the banjo had something to do with you being from Southern Louisiana. But
that's terrible.
I still think you should come on the air next show and play the banjo for us.
Well, the banjo, unfortunately, is still in Louisiana. I didn't take it up to London.
We'll find a banjo for you.
If you find me a banjo, I'll play on air. Sure, I don't have any problem.
We'll go look for that.
My loving memorial to Pete Seeger.
All right, thanks for joining us for this week's Devil's Advocate. Probably less entertaining next week without the State of the Union, but we'll catch up with you next Wednesday at 5 on KTXT.